15th floor of the Energy Building, this is GNR Airtime, the podcast that explores the current trends from emerging and well-established industries hosted by the lawyers of GNR. This podcast is for general guidance only and does not constitute definitive advice.
Everyone, we are back today with GNR Airtime by popular demand. Today, we have a session to talk about digital banks. Here with me is Bang Sam, a senior associate from our Jakarta corporate team who has been working in many of our bank deals for the past couple of years. Hi, Bang Sam. It's good to have you here.
Hi, Anes. Likewise, it's a pleasure.
Okay, so just to kick off the session, Bang Sam, could you elaborate a bit on what really is digital banks and what are the examples of those? Have we seen any of those banks here in Indonesia, Bang?
Hi, Agnes. A very good question. Actually, from an Indonesian law perspective, a digital bank is not really recognized as a separate form of a bank. Indonesia only has two types of bank. The first of all is a commercial bank, or we call it bank umum, and the second is a rural bank, or Bank Perkreditan Rakyat, which can only cover a more local customer base. Now, digital bank itself was introduced around 2000, about just as a form of a business format, actually. So in a digital bank, the bank can operate without having any branch offices other than its head office. Okay, so just to give you an example, we have Genius from Bank BTPN, Woke from Bank Bukopin, Digibank from DBS. So all of these are just a way of implementing the business. The bank itself is the normal rural commercial bank.
I see. Okay, that's very helpful, Bang Sam. So perhaps a curious question is, why so many so fast? Are there any particular reasons as to why we have so many of these banks venturing into the digital bank area and in recent years as well?
Okay, so there are mainly two reasons. Probably we can start with the more legalistic one. So there is an OJK regulation where banks need to fulfill a minimum capital by a certain date. And the last date was banks need to have a core capital of 3 trillion by 31st December 2022. And because of banks needing to meet this requirement, there was a lot of banks for sales or banks need to be merged to be able to meet this. Because if they don't meet this, the penalty will be that commercial bank is downgraded into a rural bank, which we know one has been downgraded, which is PT Prima Master Bank. Now, this happened actually on the same time with the rapid technological advancement of Indonesian society, in particular with the pandemic condition where people were limited in going to physical branch offices. So there was a need to conduct business digitally. Now, what we understand from our clients, because the shift in behavior consumers are because of nearly more than 46% of our population consists of millennial generations. And they are more internet savvy, if you might say. So this created quite a boom in digital banks. And this was captured by the banks itself, because what we understand from the bank survey, 54% Indonesians prefer to use digital banks channel in engage their banking activities during COVID-19 pandemic.
So it's a mix of both in that sense, Yabang. On one hand, we have the regulatory requirement, but on the other hand, we do have other factors that really drive the appetite on banking and digitalization of it. Well, when you say that the last requirement for the core capital was set on 31st December last year, so does that mean that we're done with the wave, or are there further implementing steps that the banks will need to take to implement the digitalizations of it?
Yeah, so what we see there are two types of new digital banks. There are digital banks that are truly digital bank players outside Indonesia coming into Indonesia, for example, like WeLab. And there are also a lot of like existing banks transforming themselves or acquiring smaller banks for them to transform into a digital bank. For example, like BCA has Blue, Bank Mega has Alobank. So we see that this still being a sexy industry going forward, especially given now I think Indonesia has adjusted with the conveniences of having a bank easily accessed from their smartphones.
I see. That's very interesting, Bang. So in that sense, the wave is not over, yeah. Perhaps one last question to close off our discussion today, Bang Sam. From your experience so far, do you think that there are any regulatory hurdles or constraints that our investors should be aware of?
Thank you, Agnes. Yeah, I think one concept is quite new for our foreign clients is that the Indonesian single present policy, where Indonesia limits the ownership for an individual or a company to only maximum 25% of that bank. However, what we understand is that this can be waived, and it is what is conducted in practice. So the investor will request a waiver to OJK to be allowed to obtain more than 25% stake in the bank. Now, the second big hurdle would be for the investor to pass the fit and proper test. So the shareholders itself and also any new directors or commissioners that they will need to appoint will need to pass the fit and proper test. The fit and proper test would not only be imposed on the new shareholder, but they also assess up to the ultimate parent of within the group. So probably just a heads up, so they will need to be ready to disclose information about the company itself and also the ultimate parent of the group, which is sometimes might be difficult if not coordinated correctly. I think this is all that I can share for you today, Agnes.
I see. That sounds like quite a bit to navigate, and I would imagine that the investors will need our constant guidance to go through all that. Yeah.
Indeed.
All right. That sounds like that should be all, Bang Sam. It's great to have you here. Thank you for the very informative sessions, and see you around next episode in GNR Airtime.